Вие сте со SPS на Македонски. Слушнете повеќе прилози на sps.com.au/Macedonian.
Lindsay Pollock, thank you for speaking with SBS Macedonian. It's a great personal pleasure that you're on our program. Finally, you're so well known for having many hats as a Queensland-based musician, an instrument maker, a composer, musical director, community music facilitator, performer and recording artist. What our listeners would also like to know more about is your association with Macedonian music. You've recorded many traditional Macedonian folk tunes and dances throughout the years, and even learned from our experts, lived in Macedonia and had many associations and collaborations. I'd like to take you right back to the beginning, and if you could tell us how it all came about.
Right. Firstly, I'm delighted to be on the program. And yes, Macedonian music has had an immense effect, not just on my musical life, but just on my life generally. And it's like many things in life, it's those chance encounters. And for me, the chance encounter was an album, a vinyl album in a friend's record collection back in the 70s. And it was a record of Macedonian folk dances, and the starring artist was Petsia Tanasovsky, who's probably the best known of all Macedonian gaita players or bagpipe players. And I just fell in love with the sound. I couldn't not go past a day without listening to that album, and decided that one day I would learn the instrument. And so, to cut a long story short, I eventually got to Macedonia firstly in 1977, and over the next couple of years spent 8 months living there, particularly in order to learn the gaita, Macedonian bagpipe. And I was lucky enough to, while I was in Skopje, looking just for some accommodation, to not only find accommodation, but there was a granny flat in the backyard of a gaita player, Laza Nikolovsky, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But lived in his back garden for 3 months, and he at that stage was retired, so he spent about 3 hours every day with me just playing, and I'd be recording. And that was sort of the next step in my love affair with Macedonian music. Also at that time I was I'd gone over to Europe originally to study musical instrument making. I was working, travelling around in museums making measurements of instruments, but I'd set up a workshop in London, and while I was there I was lucky enough to come across a dance group called the Živko Fijefov dance group, named after a Macedonian folklorist. Based in Skopje. And that group not only were doing the dances, but they had an instrumental ensemble attached to it, but they were minus a gaita player. So, so I ended up playing with that group. We recorded an album and then went back to Macedonia with them, playing at the Bitola Ilindenski Denovi Festival. And that was
that in 1977, you say?
That would have been then in 78.
Oh, right.
When I returned. And so I was there basically. I had two visits, one living in just outside Skopje in Dračevo, and then the second time, first of all, going to the festival in Bitola and meeting many wonderful musicians and being invited to then to go and visit them. So I spent the next 3 months just travelling around, visiting them, travelling sometimes by myself, sometimes with a couple of friends, Linda Dawson, an Australian from Sydney, and Chris Gunston from London. And particularly fell in love then also with the Romani or Gypsy music from Eastern Macedonia in Berovo, that style of brass band music, which has really affected a lot of my musical development too.
So how generous were the Macedonian and Roma musicians with their craft and relaying their knowledge onto you?
Incredibly generous. Mainly, I think, because at that stage particularly there weren't, a huge number of non-Macedonians that were interested in the music, so they were just very encouraging of this young musician coming all the way from Australia. often they couldn't really believe it. They sort of couldn't quite understand what I was doing there, but they could see my passion and my excitement, and the fact that when I was travelling, particularly the second time, that I actually was able to play the music. And so it was a very, very hospitable, welcoming relationship that I had, and particularly when I travelled to Berevoort and stayed with the Destanovsky family a number of times over that period that I was there, a very, very warm and wonderful relationship developed, which we basically reconnected 35 years later, and I was able then to repay some of that wonderful hospitality and brought 19 of those musicians over to Queensland.
That's right, fantastic. So they, in a way, they took you under their wing.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. Lindsay, do you think you could define what it is about Macedonian music that you fell in love with?
I think there was a whole range of sort of things as a musician that I loved. I mean, I was a wind player. I had first of all studied classical clarinet for, you know, a good 10 years and from when I was about 11. But then I'd sort of decided, yeah, that wasn't quite for me, and I already had got into making my own instruments or starting to make very simple flutes initially from bamboo and then from timber. But I was looking for this particular sort of reed sound. And a single reed sound that maybe was a little bit rougher than the sort of the polished clarinet style of Western clarinet music.
Mm-hmm.
So it was partly the quality of sound. It was also the various uneven meters, particularly the sevens, the fives, the nines, the elevens, the thirteens that are so prevalent in Macedonian music in terms of the rhythmic structure. Also the scales that we use, the quality of singing. So, yeah, all those things and the way it was interconnected with dance as well.
Apart from playing the original music, do you find you're influenced by it in your compositions?
Absolutely. And initially that wasn't, wasn't an intentional thing. It's just that it had such a big impact on me at a very, very formative stage in my life.
I
mean, at that point when I first went over there in 77, I was 24, I was, you know, just still very much developing as a musician. So that music influenced me very, very much. I mean, I was over there for 8 months and then I kept playing it. And I found then that music and ever since has very much crept very strongly into my own compositions without me, you know, trying to create something that is Macedonian influenced. That's just what has happened. So it's although my sort of cultural heritage isn't Macedonian, my musical heritage in a sense is.
Well, what is your own cultural heritage?
Well, like many Australians, I'm a bit of a mongrel. My father was born in Vienna and came over here when he was 17. My mother was born in Australia, but she comes from Norwegian and French ancestry, so it's a sort of a Austrian, Norwegian, French mix.
That's quite complex too.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit more about your album based on Balkan music?
Yeah, we've had a group of musicians which we call the Balkanics. We're based up on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
But it includes a couple of musicians that I've had a long relationship with. I've played with Philip Griffin since the early 80s, so not that long after I came back from Macedonia, in fact, and I was over in Perth setting up the Multicultural Music Centre of West Australia, which later became Culture. And I was there, I had a group called Makedonski Bop, and sort of a play on the Eastern Macedonian word for beans, and combining the double meaning with dance. But that was a group that Phil played in, and then we've kept in contact and had different projects over the years. So Phil's now living in Brisbane after travelling all over the world. And also another person I've played with for 20 years is Tunji Bayer, who's a percussionist who I've worked with for a very, very long time, wonderful drummer. And he's living up here near Mulaney on the Sunshine Coast as well. And then Anthony Pitsika and Rick Halstead also in Mulaney. And Rick is another musician, a sax player, who I've played with for a long time. So we've been playing, I guess, our own style of Macedonian-influenced music, sometimes using the traditional instruments, using two tamburas and gaida, combined with Western flute, and then also other times using a more sort of Romani-influenced style of music, using two saxophones and an instrument called a rezuki, which Anthony himself has invented and made, and drum kit and electric bass.
Now, you're an excellent instrument maker. Have you ever tried to make Macedonian instruments?
Yeah, for a while that was the main thing that I was making. I was making Macedonian and Bulgarian gaiders because that was I'd come back to Australia, and I was sort of passionate about that music, and so I was making those instruments. Also a few of sort of simple Macedonian flutes or shapelkas. Yes. But I'm not making the guitars anymore, but I made quite a few of those over a period of time.
Now, you've mentioned both Macedonian and Bulgarian guitars. Do you notice differences in the guitars?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's a difference which is not bound by contemporary national boundaries. It's because it's very much a cultural thing that goes back generations. And mm-hmm. So it's a sort of a slow, as you move from Bulgaria into Macedonia, that obviously the difference between Eastern Macedonia and Western Bulgaria are very little, because they sort of blend into each other. But overall, the main difference is that in Bulgaria, that it's the bagpipes from further east that sort of predominate, as in the higher pitched ones. Right. So often there'll be the high pitched guitar in D, which is the one that you mostly hear. But then if you go to the Rhodop area of Bulgaria, you'll hear the low cover guitar. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Macedonian ones sort of tend to be pitched in between those two, most commonly in A or B flat.
And is there a known reason for that, or
it's the way that all sort of folk traditions change? They develop in certain ways in certain places. Some people give the reason to be correct for male or female voices, but generally it's that certain instrument makers will hundreds and hundreds of years ago will make a certain instrument, and that can also be a way that a certain style of music is developed in a village or a certain ethnic area.
So have you performed extensively in Macedonia, had an opportunity to perform widely?
No, I haven't performed widely there. When I was over there travelling, it would be more sort of, impromptu mm-hmm. jams and plays rather than performing. And when I've been back more recently, that was sort of more just connecting with musicians over there, doing, I think, just really one performance in the town of Berevo when I was over there.
What about your repertoire, your Macedonian repertoire, folk songs and dances? Is that extensive?
I guess it's reasonably extensive. I mean, I went through a period where I wasn't playing the music nearly so much. I moved from down in Sydney across to Perth, and then eventually up to a little town of Kinkin, only 300 people. And I guess the thing that I really missed was the way that music was a really much a part of the culture. And that's something we haven't talked about, which for me was the real eye-opener. Because my initial love affair with the music was as a musician, but I was totally ignorant about Macedonia, the Macedonian people, how the music had its place within the culture. But of course, living over there was the best thing that could have happened to me. I mean, nowadays you can learn through YouTube, and I was lucky that I didn't have YouTube, because it meant that I had to go over there. And what I learnt was that was far, far more important than the musical knowledge that I was gaining, because I was learning about how the music was intrinsic to the culture, and that was a really, really great learning experience for me, and I think changed the way the direction of my life went. For example, coming over and wanting to set up the Multicultural Music Centre in Perth, because I became just so aware of the many musicians that weren't acknowledged in Australia because they came from diverse traditions. And I was just blown out when I, first came to Australia. So the music for me was then, I understood that it was part of this overall process. But anyway, I've sort of gone away from your original question, about the repertoire, which when I came up to Queensland, then I really missed that connection to culture, because when I was in Sydney, I was sort of very connected to the Macedonian community. And also when I was over in Perth, connected to the Macedonian community over there. But coming up here to the Sunshine Coast, it sort of didn't exist. And I sort of then lost the interest in just playing the music for, is this sort of performance, exotic music. I felt that it really needed a place in the culture. But I didn't play for a long time, and then have come back to it again in the last 10 years. I have got a pretty big repertoire. I put out a book of folk tunes many, many years ago, originally in 1990, I think the second edition was 94, and then we reprinted it again in 2005, and that was all the tunes that I'd been lucky enough to learn just by ear.
Yes.
From the various people. So that's a book of 91 folk tunes that we fondly call the Red Book because it's just got a red cover.
Yes.
But that's a book that's really done the rounds. I mean, we've sort of now probably sold a few thousand. And the reason I did that was because I found that there was an incredible interest from other musicians. And so I'd write out the piece of music, and then years later I'd come across a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy of it, and I thought, well, obviously there's a need for this. And so I thought,
yes,
put together that book of music with the help of my friend Philip Griffin, who I mentioned before. Yeah, so there's sort of quite a big repertoire. And in the Balkanics, in this current group that has just recorded the album that you were referring to, it's a mixture of those pieces and then also some original pieces that are inspired by that music.
So all of that work, it turned out to be a very important resource for musicians here.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the other day, and we're talking about the sort of the hinterland of the Sunshine Coast, and, just outside of a town of a few hundred, and there was a concert going on with an Irish band that I know well, the great musicians, and then suddenly one of the songs from the book came on. I thought, oh, I bet I know where they've got that from. And then sure enough, at the end of the piece, they said, we're going to dedicate this to Lindsay, because they had sort of got that particular... that piece out of the Red Book, the famous Red Book. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I suppose we could say that the exposure of Macedonian folk music in many ways owes a lot to you for bringing it to the fore and bringing it to the wider Australian audiences.
Well, I guess I was sort of just had, a big role in that, mainly because I was around at a time where, like many diverse musics in Australia, it was underrepresented and underrecognised, and I just happened to be somebody who fell in love with it and was in a position to love it and share it, and in doing so that sort of spread amongst various musicians outside the Macedonian community. It's been a wonderful journey. I mean, here we are, 2019, and back in 1981 I was that in Sydney soon after arriving from my time in Macedonia, and really welcomed into the Macedonian community.
Yes.
And a few weeks ago we were down in Sydney with the Balkanics playing a concert down there, and one of the concerts was with the cultural group Ilinden, one of the big Macedonian cultural organisations, and they're sort of celebrating their 50th anniversary. But they were one of the organisations that I actually had contact with back
early
in 1981. So was that? That's 38 years ago. That's a bit scary.
Yes.
But to give you an idea of how important that was, not just to me, but also vice versa to other musicians and other people and people within the Macedonian community, we arrived to set up and do our sound check, and an older man, Macedonian man, came up to me with a big grin and sort of pulled an old sort of tattered envelope out of his pocket, and out of the envelope came a photo, and he showed it. He said, "Look at this." And I looked at the photo, and there was me in full Macedonian costume outside the Macedonian church, and I went, I remembered straight away that was Easter. It was one of the big Easter celebrations. It was 1981. It was outside the Macedonian church, and there were hundreds of people, all big crowd of Macedonian, and then a whole lot of people dancing. And he said, and this man was now, his name was Todd, his name is... his age now is 83.
Oh, right.
And he said, "I took that photo, and the man leading the dance is my father." And there I was sort of playing for him, and also going back to, playing for Ilinden. There's a very nice sort of strong relationship that's sort of rebuilding with that organisation. So it's great that, 38 years later, that connection is there. And,
yes,
and just in the same way that you're asking me to tell a little bit about my history with the music, Pekko and Goran, two of the people who organised the Macedonian dance that we did with Ilinden that few weeks back, they said, "Before anything else, like, please, will you say something to this group of people about your connection and why? And because it's important to us. It's important to you, but it's also important for all of us." And they're a group who are doing wonderful things at the moment. They're getting the traditional instruments back into the music within their ensemble, so they'll soon have live musicians playing gaida and zur and tambura and kaval and tapan.
Yes.
And yes. So that's great to see.
Well, beautiful moments are remembered for life. That's an example of that, obviously. Just out of interest, have you ever had any negative responses throughout your musical performing life when you've played Macedonian music? Has there ever been any reaction to the fact that you're not of Macedonian background?
Never.
Yeah,
interesting. It's like not once. Yeah, it's always been 100% supportive. Yeah. There was that one time when I sort of thought I wasn't sure, but it was me totally misreading a situation. I'd come back from Macedonia and I was pretty poor at that stage. I didn't have much money, so I was busking, and because my big love was the Macedonian gaida, I was out front of the Hoyt Cinemas in George Street in the middle of Sydney. And I was playing, I'd been busking there, and another movie came out, and suddenly this group of pretty tough sort of guys in their early 20s sort of came straight towards me and then formed a circle around me, and I thought, oh, what's going on? Someone lifted up their hands on each other's shoulders and started doing it and started dancing, and it was a group of Macedonians. And it was actually through them that then I sort of made the connection to the Macedonian community in Sydney.
Well, I'm so glad that the Macedonian inspiration found you at the tender age of 19 or so to leave a lasting impression. We're indebted to you, Lindsay Pollock. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Сакате ли да чуете повеќе прилози како овој? Слушате подкаст преку Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify или од каде и да ги добивате вашите подкасти.